Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 26th, 2000. In the fireside room this morning, or this afternoon, Mary Scott Borea conducts her session, Social Justice, Transforming a Vision, Racism, 60s and 90s Analysis, looking at institutional racism in the year 2000. Long title, but hang in there. This is SB9M2000-1 is the tape number. Now let's join Mary for her session.
And I constantly feel repeating myself over and over again. So it's always a challenge to figure out what are the current issues, where are people with some of these current issues, and how do you sort of not go over and rehash stuff that you've done for 20 or 30 years. And so it's really kind of always a challenge for me. I also think that it's a real challenge for an African American to be sitting in front of a white group raising these issues, and that sometimes it feels self-serving, but it should be self-serving, right? But it also feels like it. At some point, when is it not my issue? When is it your issue? And so I sat in on Paul Olson's session the other day, a piece of it, and I thought, wow, it seems so easy the way he helps people understand this. And I thought, how much of it is the messenger? And our ability as the ability of whites to hear other whites talk about this and accept it. And so that's a challenge. What I plan to do this week is to sort of create a hodgepodge of conversations that I'm curious about or that I think about a lot. And so some of it flows together and some of it doesn't flow together. And what I have found is that I am constantly very much back and forth on the issues of race, racism, how to solve problems of race and racism, where I'm at, what my role is, how I interact, who I interact with. And so I guess what I'm saying is that today and this week, for me, is nothing more than an opportunity to have a conversation. I don't think that I come as an expert of anything more than my own experience and how I've interacted with other people on these questions, and not from sort of an expert that says, this is the law on the issue of race, and this is what I expect you to take and absorb, but really to kind of think about it. And so today, I wanted to start out today kind of having some kind of a context. And so there are lots of contexts, right? So what is the overall context that I wanted to say for today? And so I thought about the place that I'm at in helping people to sort of come to terms with racism is to kind of really deeply understand institutional racism. And I think that people intellectually get it. And I think sometimes we get it intellectually because we can distance ourselves from it personally. Well, it's those bad systems out there. It's all that stuff that we don't support, you know. And so therefore, I can get it. But I also think that it is one of those things that we don't feel we know how to tackle, because those are institutions out there that we don't feel we have any power or control over. And so so we're kind of left with, well, I can only deal with me. So therefore, I can't solve the problem of racism. I can only deal with me. So I'm kind of starting out the conversation this week with sort of looking at institutional racism. So I thought, okay, well, I'll do some overview stuff. And I had a video that we use a lot with the group Crossroads Ministries, which is a anti-racism training group that made this video a couple years ago, and I thought, I'll use that. And then I decided, no, I don't want to use that. It's too straightforward. It's too easy to get. It's too, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And I felt like we all know A, B, C, D, E, F, G. So So I decided I didn't want to use that. So then I decided what I wanted to use, which when I was here 5 years ago, I didn't have the video. I actually just had, I don't know if you are familiar with Derek Bell and Derek Bell's work. He was a law professor at Harvard several years ago who has written several books. And this video, which is entitled Cosmic Slop, comes from one of the chapters in his book. The chapter's called Space Traders. And it is a ridiculously silly sort of parody on race relations. And why I like it is because I think it poses the extreme in a really, you know, silly kind of way. But it does make us think, and for me, it makes me think about two things. One is, you know, what are the current issues around racism? What are some of the current manifestations of racism that exist? And how do they exist? And, you know, how have we gone from one period of time to a current period of time? And then I think the second question it poses is, who are our allies? And how are our allies engaged? And at what point are our allies not our allies? And who can we count on when the ultimate happens? And, you know, I don't know that I think the ultimate will happen, but I certainly think that there are roads to the ultimate, and the ultimate meaning the total separation of the races in whatever form that is. So the video that I'm going to show kind of poses, I think, at least some of those points, and then I hope we can have a conversation about it. But I thought the first thing I would do is just open up with some just dialogue from us as to what we think, what do we think have been the differences, or what is better and worse. We do this exercise in the training that I do. It's called better or worse. What's better and what's worse about race relations? So the first question I'll ask you, and this will be interactive, and what I'm going to do all week is going to be a little interactive, because it's a little intimidating to have you all looking at me and expecting something profound to come out of my mouth. So what I'd like for you to do is, I'm going to pose the question, how are race relations better now than they were pre-60s? Now, who can remember what happened in the pre-60s? Most of you have hair the same color as mine. Some of you do, and some of you don't. So what happened? What was going on in the 60s? It's an obvious question, but...
A lot of burning of cities, towns.
Okay, what was happening pre-60s?
Segregation,
okay. So a lot of really kind of extreme racial conditions.
Segregated schools,
okay. And then in the 60s, we had the civil rights movement, and a lot of that changed, okay? So the question that I'm posing to you is race relations better now than they were pre-60s, or are they worse? So the first thing I'd like for you to do is maybe just find a partner, and if you could just come up with one example of how race relations are better now than they were pre-60s. Just maybe one example, and then we'll just collect what your responses are. I'll give you just a couple minutes to do that. How are race relations better now than they were pre-60s?
Just experience.
I think that's enough time to find one thing better, right? Hopefully, right? So why don't you just tell me real quickly what you came up with, and then we'll just, I'll just write them up.
Schools? School? The room integration schools.
Did you say the schools have integrated?
Yeah.
Okay.
More interracial couples?
Okay. All right, schools, couples, okay.
Employment.
Okay, what do you want to say about that?
Post office.
More opportunities.
Okay. Okay.
Post office.
Okay, what about the post office?
Yeah, when I was working there for 27 years, all of the, you know, the whites and the Negroes, we all got along just fine. There was no problem in the post office as far as race.
Okay, so the race relations are better?
Yes.
Among people who work together?
Yes.
Okay, what else?
Voting rights are guaranteed for...
Okay.
The emergence of a black middle class.
Why am I putting numbers here, right? Okay, anything else?
I think the legality of it, maybe a way to summarize a lot of that is a lot of the things that were on the books as being illegal in the 60s are legal or the other way around.
Okay, so we have outlawed segregation and all of its laws.
More people of color on TV, movies.
Okay.
In more visible positions in the communities.
Okay. Some affirmative action policies are still in place.
Okay. See, we put that all the way down at the bottom.
It's a very complicated mess.
Yeah. Okay. All right, now, let's switch that question then and ask, okay, if things are better, then how are things worse now than they were in the 60s, pre-60s? And I'll just give you a few minutes to come up with some examples.
That they seem to pull over more Negroes,
okay,
than before, okay. I would say.
The Rampart scandal in L.A.
Prison populations are high.
Okay.
Drug war. Rise of single parent family.
Racial profiling.
Yeah. Gang warfare based on race.
I don't know how you want to summarize this, but we're talking about how there's a lot of subtle racism and people either not aware or thinking the problem is solved, you know, that we've been through it and we've got it all taken care of now, so they don't have to be concerned about it. But there's still so much out there.
Okay, Benner did that, right?
Yeah.
Racism going underground, you know.
Yeah.
It's still there, but you have to be quiet about it. You can't,
White
out
light.
Neo-Nazism and access through the internet to racial propaganda.
It's hard to maybe summarize in a few words, but sometimes in employment situations, there might be legitimate personnel problems with a minority person, and legitimate complaints from other employees are interpreted or can be interpreted as racially motivated.
Maybe some loss of culture for blacks through the integration into the white society.
Okay, anything else?
I feel like education systems are becoming increasingly more segregated. And that the black middle class actually isn't emerging, but is declining. Like the share of the the middle class is becoming less and less per individual.
Okay.
And I'm going to stop talking after this one. But the military-industrial complex and how the military disproportionately targets people of color, not just African Americans, but Latinos and Native Americans as well.
So, if I ask you the question, how are race relations better or worse? Are they better or worse than the 60s, from the 60s to now? What would you say by looking at this list?
I'd have to say worse.
You'd
just
say
by
worse.
Looking at this.
Oh, okay.
They're different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're different. Okay. Mm-hmm. Would you say
the big
more
ones? The big ones seem better. The little hidden ones seem worse.
Huh. Okay.
I think it seems more complex. One of the things that didn't get up on either side is that when
oh, you're up there.
Yeah. And I think in the late 50s, in part because of the civil rights movement, and into the 60s, we tended to think race relations in the United States had to do with blacks and whites. And even in that one sort of objective question, things are much more complicated. Mm-hmm. That we come to understand race relations, including many more groups, and then the relationship between racism or race relations and other kinds of human relations. So mm-hmm. It just seems much more complicated. Mm-hmm. The goals aren't so clear.
Mm-hmm. I think one complicating factor, it's probably always been there, but we're recognizing more, is the intersection of race and class.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Much more obvious.
At the in the 60s, it seemed as though we were going to have simple solutions. All we had to do was just integrate the schools, and it was going to take care of the whole problem. Mm-hmm. And we discovered that it was much more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the question.
Well, I was going to just add that it seems to me it's better the relations. Well, I don't know about the relations are better, but anyway, we're much more aware and cognizant of what the problems are. And mm-hmm. In the 60s, we had no idea that all this stuff was going on under there.
Well, I would say it's obvious that it isn't better or worse, it's very different. Mm-hmm. And it's deeper, we're aware that it's much more complex, that it has a much more multiracial face to it. It isn't just sort of a black-white paradigm. That it is, and that what seemed obvious to us in the 60s, at the end of the 60s, well, isn't so obvious. The notion about the black middle class and what segregated schools would do. So it's a much more complicated picture. And so the way we approach it is a much deeper, complicated issue. So I'm just gonna stop there and sort of have us now go to the video, and then we'll come back and have some more conversation. Wow.
Is that focusing there or is back here?
He just blew on it.
Standing over it.
Right.
Further than the outer limits, deeper than deep. The black hole in your mind and your ass for a follow-up. Because once you've passed the point of no return, you are caught in the cosmic soul.
I'm afraid to touch it.
That might be the end of our request.
Mm-hmm. They call me the doctor. I'm the head man around here. I'll be your seeing eye guy.
Can you hear now?
Yes. We have strangers bearing gifts. There may be strings attached. And what might be strange for some may be a noose for others. Let me show you what I mean. Check it.
Ernie, some of these people have been out here since 2 o'clock this morning, so the aliens aren't scheduled to arrive before noon. getting pretty excited as America prepares for its first encounter with space since NASA went bankrupt back in 1998. It's quite a circus.
Thank you, Stryker. Of course, we will go back to Plymouth Rock the moment the aliens are sighted. In other news, the Environmental Protection Agency has added Hartford, Connecticut to its list of cities to be evacuated by year's end. Carcinogen levels there have topped those found in Baltimore last year. The gap between black salaries and white widened. Wait, something's now happening at Plymouth Rock. Stryker.
As you can hear, Bernie, there's definitely something going on now. We can't see anything yet, but this humming is definitely growing louder. You know, ever since the alien signal was first received some 3 months ago, speculation has run rampant as to their appearance.
Think of the weapons you could create? Mr. President, Senator, you were elected by the slimmest of margins. Your African-American vote was key.
I don't expect them to be thrilled, but can I put this delicately? Their future electoral clout is going to be severely limited.
Casper, let's be honest. Do you really think the aliens will treat them worse than we have?
Oh, the real issue here is spin control. The decision has to be the will of the people and not the administration policy. How about a national referendum? Have NCI fire up a couple of those yes and no 900 numbers.
I'll be damned. We're on to something here. Professor Govardley, you look like you want to say something.
Gentlemen. As you know, Mr. President, I have been a lifelong card-carrying Republican. I feel I was instrumental in your moderate wing wrestling control of the party from religious extremists. I have often supported this administration's repeal of affirmative action legislation, not protested its decreasing handouts to the poor. And in helping you undermine these policies, I realized that your reasons for doing so differed from mine. And yet I was always a good soldier for the party. I sincerely believed, and still believe, that black people need to learn how to stand on their own two feet without the crutches of governmental legislation. But I'm afraid I must protest in the strongest terms possible what I've heard in this room today. What is being proposed cannot be passed off euphemistically as selective service. At its best, it is group banishment. At its worst, it is utter and complete extermination.
Wait. Did I miss something? Who said anything about exterminating?
Space chair to see. Perfectly nice, civil. Their planet might be one great big club med for all we know.
Sam, we do not even know if these creatures can deliver on their end. You and I play poker together. What if they're as good at bluffing as you are?
You whistling Dixie. You look like a damn idiot if the aliens took off and left me nothing but a big bag of tortilla chips.
We're asking for a peek at the goodies.
And if they're not BSing, we'll schedule a national referendum on the night before their deadline. Call up MCI, ask them to fire up two yes and no 900 numbers.
Gentlemen.
Lady.
Yes, talk to me.
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say I love your show.
And tease.
I watch it every day. But my comment is this. Black people have always been complaining about how bad they're treated here, so I would think they'd just be tickled pink to get a free ride someplace else.
The free ride is fine. It's the return ticket I'm worried about, okay?
Well, Daddy, looks like your chickens are finally coming home to roost.
Look, little Miss Militant. I mean, give Dad a break, all right? How is he supposed to know? Besides, I'm sure this will all blow over in a couple of days. Right, Dad?
Right. I need a black psychic who says he's had his bags packed for 3 years. Stay with us.
Absolutely the most amazing thing I've ever seen. The Statue of Liberty has actually been turned into gold. Now officials from Fort Knox here confirm that it is solid and it is pure.
Officials estimate the value of the gold at over $15 trillion. Enough not only to pay off the federal deficit, but also to give every American, every remaining American, a tax of 3 years. This just in, alien craft have vacuumed the air over Denver and Los Angeles. Smog levels are reported at zero. And live from Chicago, our new team is sending these pictures from Lake Michigan.
Yes, sir.
And I'm taking all my sisters with me, too.
Well, they don't tell them what kind of electricity
the Navy's gonna have on them ships. But you know us black folks, we don't like arriving nowhere all nappy-headed.
So you really think you're gonna set this away?
And I told you one about the American dream. So all the niggas swimming back to Africa with a Jew under each arm.
You're outrageous.
But you know, Piggy,
we could fight back. Like the Palestinians. Rocks and guns.
Nigga, please. Why am I gonna get myself killed just to stay here? I just hope they got those little bottles of Remy Martin on the flight. Got to have my Remy Martin.
Thank you. contributions of African Americans. If this referendum passes and we vote to send dark-skinned people up into outer space, I tell you one thing, you can forget about ever seeing another green team again.
Favor and one against the space trader. Polls will remain open for the next 3 hours, but we should be able to project a decision very shortly. Ladies and gentlemen, with just 6% of the vote tallied, we project. Election centers will be set up tomorrow morning by the National Guard. The aliens say that they will allow only one piece of carry-on luggage per person. This is Bernard Shields. Goodbye.
Thank you.
prosperity. For World News Now, I'm Stryker O'Rourke.
Every bargain ain't a bargain. American cannibalism, brothers and sisters, that. Let me see if I can call them aliens back. I'm gonna tell them they're having a 1 cent sale. They can get the rest of y'all for a penny.
The divine is beyond the power of words to define. But some people think that if you name it, you can claim it. When that happens, don't get caught in the middle. That's about to happen to this young priest.
I think we just have a few minutes. I didn't realize the video was quite that long. What was Derrick Bell trying to say in this satire?
State of affairs aren't as positive as we might think. It's pretty easy for us to go back on, or whites, American in general, to go back on what everyone's always saying about it leaving.
Who here has read anything by Derrick Bell? Who's familiar with Derrick Bell? Do you have any comments, Rabbi, on Derrick Bell's work? Derrick Bell was a Harvard law professor who had been at a Harvard for quite a while, a long time, and recently, probably within the last 10 years, basically told Harvard if they didn't bring on another tenured person of color onto the staff, that he would give up his tenure and leave. Well, Harvard didn't rise to the occasion, so he left. And his writing is pretty cynical, I think. And he sort of poses sort of the extreme, and he, I think, makes us think about, I mean, his thought is that we'll never change, that race relations will never change, and that there's some basic reasons why. And I think what this sort of depiction of it is, it sort of poses that extreme, and sort of, to me, it raises the question that people of color, in particular in this video, black people are expendable. And the various interest groups, the chapter really kind of goes into a little bit more detail than the video, but the various interest groups sort of raises that question that people of color at any given time could be pretty expendable depending upon the particular situation. And I'm wondering if there are any thoughts about any current situations that are, we started this with a discussion about institutional racism that are, and I think some comments that you made and sort of the better, worse.
I think it applies to the right side of the word, prison of population for one.
Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I went to a small town in Minnesota a couple months ago where they're building all these private prisons all over. And so now sort of the prison industry has gone private. And I was shocked to know, and probably it's pretty common, I mean, I don't know, that the prison population is counted in the census of the town which it's in. And so here you have a little all-white town that suddenly has a prison population of 1,000, 2,000. Who do you think? You think they're from that particular community? No, they're bringing them in from Florida, and they're shipping them in from Chicago. And so we now have a small town that once had a population of maybe 1,000 people, now have a population of 3,000 people, and two-thirds of those are men of color or people of color. So now we've sort of shifted the population, you know. So you wonder, people are paranoid about the census. You know, what's it gonna do for a community that now can count in its census a population that doesn't have the right to vote in that community or any other community? So, I mean, it's sort of these new forms of sort of institutional racism that are on the surface for the average American. It's, you lock them up. you know, and committing crime, lock them up. But, you know, it's sort of like, there's sort of some deeper things happening.
I think we have some pretty scathing things to say about apartheid in South Africa and Namibia. And you remember that it was based upon the so-called quantity of black blood, mm-hmm. one half. And our young friend from Namibia, Sima, was lighter skinned than her friend who came with her to our college. And yet she was known as a black, the lighter skinned woman, and the darker skinned woman as color. That's the in-between group. And it just seemed so perfectly ridiculous to me, and I think this film shows the same thing. The ridiculousness of trying to show the percentage of blood, or in this case, melatonin. I don't know why this continues when skin is such a superficial thing. It's that which covers. You know, we all need it, an epidermis. That's absolutely all it is, as far as I'm concerned. But my point is that it's very easy for us to criticize this when it occurs in another place, but in our own country, the same thing, apartheid is going on in our own country, and we can't recognize it. Or maybe we can, but we don't know what to do about it.
Other comments? Other places where these kinds of things are happening, I mean.
In the drug situation, when it was more in the black communities, that's okay, expendable. When it came to the white communities, and all of a sudden it got people's attention.
Mm-hmm. And we certainly see, it's an issue, but we also certainly see how the issue is cut differently in different communities. And again, our prison populations are made up of predominantly people of color. But we know that the use of drugs is not just a people of color problem. Mm-hmm. So we sort of cut that issue in a very racially based way.
You know, I work for the state of Oregon. I live in Southwest Oregon, which is white. And up until 1952, it was illegal for people to photograph the streets. So 4 years ago, a trainer came down for one of his trainings, but came along with different people, and he was black. And he said that on the way down the freeway, got into Southwest Oregon, so on the freeway, someone pointed a gun at him, a white, you know, pickup truck kind of. It was clear, and he was still really shook up. That was 4 years ago. 2 years ago, in Grants Pass, which is the center of white racism in Southwest Oregon. The neo-Nazis are real strong. I appreciate you mentioning that. And then what happens with all that is that the churches had counter demonstrations, and it was just amazing. But hundreds of people turned out to oppose the Nazis. So there was that. It was hopeful. But this is a film, Kate. But, you know, I don't see this because I live in white stuff. And I'm aware that my own racism is more than it used to be when I lived in cities. I look now when I see a person of color, even if they're Mexican, I kind of do a double take. So it's just, you're wrong.
I started by saying there were a couple of issues, and we'll leave in 2 minutes, I promise. A couple of issues that I think were posed for me. One was about just sort of how the constant forms of racism kind of reconfigure themselves over and over. So there's new institutional ways in which we see racism happening. And our responses to that, I'm not sure, have kept up with the forms. I'm not sure that we have responded as rapidly as the forms of racism. And so the other piece of this was, which I think is probably the place where many of us are at now, and sort of thinking about, so who are our allies? And who are the allies in this video? I mean, it was pretty ridiculous, right? I mean, who are the allies to people of color? It was the business interest. I mean, we didn't see much. We didn't see much of sort of the old line, sort of liberal, progressive, radical groups. They didn't show very much of sort of them. But it was sort of the business interests were sort of posed as sort of the allies. And, you know, we're going to lose business here. And I sort of wonder, I mean, my question is, where are the allies? And what sustains the relationship of an ally? What sustains our relationship? Because we've been through this before, right? We've marched and we've struggled. And where are allies of people of color when the institutional forms of racism continue to be posed in such a way that it makes it hard? It makes it very hard to really figure out, not only figure out who the allies are, but to put people who were once our allies in positions again where they're our allies when it affects their lives. I mean, I was talking earlier to people about schools and what's happening in our schools and how we're sort of, how that's shaping our relationships. How this continues to threaten the lives of people who were once our allies. So where do we find our allies? Maybe that's a point to end. Well, I hope this was somewhat thought-provoking.
Thank you.